Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Then we will continue with our sharing. Okay. Before we start the Heart Sutta sharing, is there anybody who would like to report meditation or ask any question regarding the meditation? Anybody? You have anything to report? You just report exactly how you do your meditation. No need to try to tell me other things. Exactly how you experience it over the last 50 or 55 minutes. Nobody? Okay, then turn to the Heart Sutta. Chapter 2. Okay. Chapter 2. We are on page 4. Okay. Page 4. Short notes taken to assist in developing a clearer and better understanding of the sutta discussed. So these are the short notes, that's why we put here recapitulation and emphasis on the previous chapter. So here we have listed the 10 perfections of paramita of the Theravada tradition to become a Sammasambuddha. Under the Theravada tradition there are 10 perfection you have to perfect. First one is dana, which is generosity or giving. So under dana, there are 3 types of giving. First is giving of materialistic wealth. Then after that, the second one is giving of life, like you donate blood. You help people, donate organ to recover from their disease or sickness. Then the last one is give of truth, where you are able to share the truth, the Dhamma. Of all the 3, it's always stated that the last one, the give of truth, is the highest gift. So that one is obvious. Then the next perfection that Bodhisattva did to perfect themselves to become Sammasambuddha is sila. Sila is morality, the precepts. So not only they cultivate precepts, they perfected them. Then the third one is also very important, nikama. Nikama is renunciation. If you can renounce, it means you have wisdom. Here, renunciation, the perfection go beyond just becoming a monk. When you renounce the world, shave your head, and become a monk. There is only one aspect of renunciation. The deeper meaning is when you can renounce everything that you come to see in the world, the phenomenal world of consciousness, or in the existential world, where you can renounce even the Dhamma, existence, the mark of life, everything, then that is true renunciation. Renounce means you no longer have delusion, you no longer attach, you no longer cling. So when you cultivate to develop the ability to be free from suffering, affliction, the severe or suffering, endure and severe, you need to have this perfection which is renunciation, nikama. Then, of course, fourth paramita is panya, wisdom, perfectional wisdom, prajna paramita sutta. One of them is the Heart Sutta. Then virya is spiritual zeal or spiritual tenacity. There is an energy that drives you to cultivate. Then kanti is patience, born of wisdom and understanding. Then you have satya. Satya is truthfulness. Then adhitana, this one is very important. The perfection of aspiration or determination or the strong resolve and vow. Then metta, which is loving kindness. And finally, upekkha, equanimity. These are the 10 perfections that the Bodhisattva who is intent on to be a Sammasambuddha must cultivate and perfect. Whereas in the Mahayana tradition, they focus on 6 perfections or the 6 paramita. They only cultivate dana, sila, kanti, virya, prajna, all these 5 are the same, except there is one dhyan or samadhi. So this one is emphasized in the Mahayana tradition. Then word of wisdom by the Buddha extracted from the Dhammapada verse on avoiding evil, do good and purify the mind. We are having right views with regards to the law of karma. This one we have covered. Dhammapada verse 1, 2, 183. Then Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23 on heedfulness or apamada vaga. The first 3 verses is most important. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful do not die, the heedless are as if dead. So this one is very clear. Distinctly understanding the difference, the wise will intend on heedfulness and rejoice in the rhyme of the Aryas or the Enlightened One. So this is verse 22, confirm what the Buddha meant by the moment you are heedful, you are destined for enlightenment. Then Dhammapada verse 23, the constantly meditative, ever mindful and the steadfast one realize the bond free Nibbana. So this one is also very, very comforting because with this is 100% confirmed that if you develop heedfulness, the 2 quality of constantly meditative and ever mindful, you will definitely realize the supreme bond-free Nibbana. Then the next one is Buddha's advice before his parinibbana. Apamadena sampadeta. So this one the Buddha just said to the monks, strive on with heedfulness. If you do this, you are destined for enlightenment. It comes from the understanding that the heedful never die, they will have the eternal life, the spiritual understanding. Whereas the heedless are as if dead means spiritually you are as if dead. Then the final summary of the first noble truth is most important. In short, it is the attachment or grasping and clinging to the 5 aggregates of form and mind or upadana khandhas. We are one's delusion or ignorant that I call dukkha or suffering. The word dukkha here is a Sanskrit, it's a Pali word. The Sanskrit rendering is dukkha, the spelling is slightly different. So this word dukkha is one of the Pali terms that cannot be translated adequately into English by one word. For no English word covers the same ground as dukkha in Pali. Suffering, ill will, anguish, unsatisfactoriness are some of the favorite rendering. The word pain, misery, sorrow, conflict and so forth are also used. The word dukkha, however, includes all that and more than that. There is a reference book, The Buddha's Ancient Path by Piyadasi. stated on page 37. Then 1.6, the seven factors of enlightenment or Satta Bhujanga. Sati is mindfulness. This is the first factor of enlightenment, followed by Dhamma investigation, Dhamma Vichaya, which is the second factor of enlightenment. Without Sati, one cannot be heedful or ever mindful. Hence, one cannot investigate the Dhamma. That's the reason why Sati or heedfulness is very important. For Sati is life, because the heedless are as if dead. With Sati, one can investigate the Dhamma. And if it is the truth, then this Dhamma can stand up to investigation, hence giving rise to the strong faith in the Buddha. Then virya or spiritual zeal, which is the third enlightenment factor, will arise, thereby enabling one to cultivate the Dhamma according to the Buddha's advice. Sati will then stabilize, and piti or the spiritual joy, which is the fourth enlightenment factor, will arise. Once piti is stabilized and become more refined, it will accumulate into pasati or tranquility of mind, which is the fifth enlightenment factor. Vipassati, becoming more and more stable, the mind will accumulate into samadhi. Samadhi is a stable, collected, and unwavering mind. And this is the sixth enlightenment factor. With sati and samadhi in place, wisdom or panya will keep on arising, giving rise to the last or the seventh enlightenment factor, which is equanimity or upekkha in Pali. So under note, I redefine samadhi. Samadhi equals a stable, collected and unwavering mind that does not waver at the moment of sense experience while in the midst of life. So initially, this samadhi is to allow you to have the ability to see things as they are, because this samadhi is collected and unwavering. So when you see things, it does not stir, because it's collected, it's not moving, unwavering. So your views, opinion, conditioning, and your belief system doesn't come in and interfere. So you see things as they are, you see truth. That's why wisdom can arise. So from samadhi, you will understand many things. You can insight into phenomena and develop all the understanding. Okay, next page, 1.7. The three universal characteristics are impermanent, suffering state, and empty nature or non-self nature, or not a permanent unchanging entity. In Pali, they are termed anicchang, dukkhang, anatta. Then the five universal law or order of nature, pancha niyama, that governs all of life and existence in this universe are: the first two are scientific law, utu niyama, or the physical law of nature, and bija niyama, or the biological order of nature. The next three spiritual law of nature are karma niyama, the law of karma, citta niyama, law of mind, and dhamma niyama, which is law of truth, or dhamma as taught by the Buddha. Understanding these three spiritual laws that governs all of our life and existence will give rise to the three important right views as taught by the Buddha in his Noble Eightfold Path. That is, right view with regards to the law of karma. So we have to bear in mind what the Buddha proclaimed. He said, you reap what you sow. Do good begets good, and do evil begets evil. And you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. So you have to really understand that karma is very important, because your entire life depends on it. So with this right view, you will know how to live your life. You don't know how to follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good, meditate to realize the wisdom. Then the second right view is law of mind. The Buddha taught the dependent origination, Paticca Samuppada, or the 12 links. This one explains to you how you function as a human being, how your mind operates, the 12 links. Dependent or ignorant, mental thinking or activity arise. That's why there is avijja, paccaya sankhara. The first two links is very powerful. Living beings who are not enlightened, they create a lot of sankhara, which is mental activity or mental thinking. That's why you think a lot. Yeah. Without avijja, or when avijja become less, your sankhara also become less. So the sign of progress is when your free mind has less thinking, you are more mindful. That is a sign of progress. The last one is law of Dhamma, the four noble truths, the five aggregate of form and mind, the five spiritual faculty, or etc. All of the essential Dhamma that the Buddha taught. So understanding these three great spiritual law is likened to understanding the secret of life, giving rise to the wisdom to enable one to truly live life. Having this right view will lead to the understanding of non-delusion, non-attachment, and non-grasping, and non-clinging, etc. Hence, freeing and liberating the mind from all suffering. These pancha niyamas, the five universal order of nature, can also be explained by the four aspects of Dhamma as explained by Ajahn Buddhadasa. He is a Thai monk. He is my teacher's teacher. In Thai, they call him Ajahn Buddhathat. So to him, he defined it using the four aspects of Dhamma. He said, first aspect, there is nature, mighty nature. The second aspect is, there are nature's law that governs nature. Then the third aspect is, he said, there is a right duty that one must perform towards this law of nature, or the law that governs nature. Then if you do that, you will reap the fruit of one's hard work after having performed those duty, like the law of karma. If you understand that law, then you take care of karma. That is your duty, the right duty. So if you do that, it will give you the good life. So that's what he means, and it's also a very good definition. Then 1.9 is very important. The three evil roots, or the three poisons that the Buddha spoke in his teaching. They are greed, hatred, and delusion. These three evil roots, you must understand clearly what they are. They are the root of all evil. They make you evil. So the moment your mind has this content of greed, greed is only not only greediness, all of your desire, your attachment, your craving, your lust, your cunningness, your covetousness, deceitfulness, they are all part of greed. And the Pali word is loba, not the one you eat. Loba, not the one. This is loba. So you have to understand what constitutes evil and what is greed. So unless you can establish and define them, you cannot put them into practice or cultivation. Then you cannot be mindful of them. The second evil root is hatred. The Pali word is dosa, which include all of your hatred, your anger, your envy, your jealousy, your aversion, your dislike, your negative emotion, sorrow and lamentation, grief, etc. Then the last one is moha, or delusion, which is self-delusion or sakayadity, that condition one's egoic mind to arise, the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, leading to all the egoic personality of selfishness, craving, fear, worry, and anxiety. They are roots of all evil. If you have them in your mind or consciousness, that it will condition and cause you to become a very evil person. So it is very important for you to develop the training of the mind via meditation to be always mindful or heedful, so that you can be aware of your mental intention at all times. And if there is any of the three evil roots behind, then you should arise the appropriate right effort to abandon them or prevent them from arising if you already have developed the understanding. Otherwise, it will condition you into negativity, leading to all the suffering. As they are also called the three poison, they will kill us spiritually if we allow them to stay in our mind. So that is the reason why I always say you have to learn to have love and compassion. You have to learn to forgive others. The moment you forgive, you actually free yourself. Yeah. When you forgive, you no longer hold that hatred or the anger towards that person. So what happens is, forgiving someone is to root out the evil root of anger, hatred, and dislike for that person. So this is how you cultivate the Dhamma. It's not that you are being kind, that you want to forgive people. It's because you know, if I don't forgive, I will hold on to the evil root and I become evil. So I need to free my mind by not holding on to all this anger, hatred. I need to have a generous heart to forgive so that I can root all this evil root out of my mind, my content of consciousness. Then this mind that is without the evil root will become beautiful. Okay, next page. Oh, sorry. Next item, 1.10. How to see beyond form and understanding Nibbana. To develop basic wisdom, one must have the ability to see form as they are and the unreality of form via its condition arising, its impermanence, suffering and non-self or empty nature, leading to our ability to see beyond form. Inability to see beyond form will result in form delusion. Where one will grasp at external form via one's delusion caused by identification with external form, thinking that they are all so real. As form divide, so once we identify via identification with, let's say, our external form, which is the physical body, then one will create the attachment to this physical body via delusion, hence worrying about it getting old, getting sick and die. It can also create duality of male and female gender, race identification, young and old, or age identification, etc., leading to all the unnecessary fear, worry, anxiety, possibility of conflict and argument caused by external form identification and division. This is what I tried to explain on the first day yesterday. When we identify each and every individual through the physical external form, then we create a lot of unnecessary division, confusion, leading to conflict, misunderstanding. But if you understand that the form doesn't represent you, then you learn to see that form clearly. Then you see beyond that form. What do you see? So I will read on. Unless you have the ability to see beyond form, chances are you will not be able to see mind, because mind is much more subtle and intangible than the solid external form. And unless you can see mind, the mundane mind, as it is via the silent mind in sati, true wisdom cannot arise. For nibbana is the cessation of form and mind. So learn to see form, the unreality of form, then learn to see beyond form, leading to the ability to see the mundane mind clearly. This can then lead to the realization of impermanence and the empty nature of the mundane or thinking mind, leading to the ability to see beyond the mundane mind via the silent mind, to realize one's true nature, which is beyond thought, beyond mind. At the mundane mind level, one still clings onto one's views and opinion and religious belief system or labor, etc. Hence the division again at mind level, leading to all the conflict and argument caused by one's delusion as before. So under the note, words divide via form and thought identification due to sacrality of self-delusion and ignorance. Hence only if one can see things as they are, that is via the direct seeing without word, concept and labeling, etc. Only then there is no more form and thought delusion to condition one's grasping and clinging, leading to all the suffering. That is, if you cannot see form and the unreality of form, then you will not be able to see beyond form and everything you come to perceive via your mundane mind, which is consciousness only, will be like so real and so meaningful to you. Hence the delusion or sakayadity. Also Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 say, mind is a forerunner of all things and mind is chief, and everything arises from the mind. So one must be wary of mind. That's why everything is summarized so beautifully under that particular section. Okay, next one is 2.1. This one is lesson 2 of the Heart Sutta, which is very important. It relates to Huineng, the sixth patriarch, how he developed all the wisdom and the understanding. So this one, you listen, it will help you develop the understanding. Thus have I heard, implies suchness or thusness of thing, or tatata in Pali. The Buddha is also called the Tathagata, meaning he is the Tathagata who is an expert in tatata or suchness. The Buddha understands truth as it is because truth is the isness of thing or suchness. We are accepting what is the reality of the moment. Important quotation from the sixth patriarch Huineng's platform sutta. Now, this one can give you a lot of wisdom if you can understand. One day while delivering firewood to a store, Huineng heard a customer reciting the Diamond Sutta and has an awakening when he heard the stanza, "The mind must have no dwelling." He immediately inquired about the sutta and decided to seek out the fifth patriarch Hongren at his monastery at Huangmei Mountain. Huineng then embarked on his journey, and after traveling for 35 days on foot, last time you had to walk, he arrived at Huangmei Mountain where the fifth patriarch was residing. From the first chapter of the Ming Canon version of the Platform Sutta, the fifth patriarch asked him, "Who are you and what do you seek?" The reply from Huineng was fantastic, extraordinary. He said, "Your disciple is a commoner from Xingzhou of Lingnan. I have traveled far to pay homage to you and seek nothing other than Buddhahood." He is not interested in sainthood, enlightenment. He wants to become a Sammasambuddha. Then the fifth patriarch questioned him, "So you are from Lingnan, a southerner and a barbarian. How can you expect to be a Buddha? Asked the fifth patriarch. The way Huining replied was extraordinary. He said, I reply, although people exist as northerner and southerner, but in their Buddha nature, there is neither north nor south. A barbarian differs from the holiness physically, but what difference is there in their Buddha nature? See, at such reply, the fifth patriarch knew, this guy is not ordinary guy. So he straight away tell him, Master Hongren, the fifth patriarch immediately asked him, okay, you go to the kitchen to do the kiosk at the rice mill. So Huining chopped firewood and pound rice at the monastery for the next 8 months. Then the next part is very interesting, how he became the sixth patriarch. One day, Master Hongren announced to the assembly. This one you have to listen. This one also involves all living beings, including you. He said, the question of insistent rebirth is a momentous one. Means you come to this samsara, life after life, to repeat all this suffering, birth and death, birth and death. This one is a momentous one, because insistent rebirth. Day after day, instead of trying to free yourself from this bitter sea of life and death, Tuoli Kuhai, you seem to go after tinted merits only. There is merits which will cause rebirth. Yet merit will be of no help if your essence of mind is obscure. Go and seek prajna, wisdom, in your own mind, and then write me a stanza about it. He who understands what the essence of mind is will be given the robe, the insignia of the patriarchship and the Dhamma, the ultimate teaching of the Zen school. And I shall make him the sixth patriarch. Go quickly. Delay not in writing the stanza, as deliberation is quite unnecessary and of no use. The man who has realized the essence of mind can speak of it at once, as soon as he is spoken to about it. And he cannot lose sight of it, even when engaged in battle. See, this is what I have been telling you. The wisdom, the Dhamma understanding that you have developed, you no need to remember. He will stay with your nature inside there. Because this is wisdom, understanding, not a knowledge. Not something that you need to commit to memory. That's why the fifth patriarch say, they can. The man who has realized the essence of mind can speak of it at once. He no need to prepare on. As soon as he is spoken to about it, and he cannot lose sight of it. Means the understanding is in your nature. You don't have to prepare yourself and commit to memory or something. That's why forget about it. The moment it is awakened to, the understanding, the wisdom, they're already there. But when you use your thought, you will have some complication and problem where you still believe the thought, which is egoic. So this part is very beautiful. So coming back to life, we have to understand. Living being, like the fifth patriarch say, even a lot of Buddhists and so-called cultivator, you know what they are interested in or not? Doing? Doing what? Doing good. To them is what? Generosity, dana, donation. But these are tinted merit. Do you understand? Tinted means they are not pure merit, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. There is a mark of a cell wanting to do this wholesomeness, this merits. That sakyadity is still there. And the greed for merit is also greed. So the motivation behind your action of that generosity or merit is greed. So if your action is born out of evil or greed, even though it's very subtle, it is still a tainted merit. It's not pure merit. That's why when you want to do wholesomeness, you don't worry. The moment you have mindfulness, heedfulness, and you are able to have one moment of pure thought, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, do you know that one moment of pure thought, the merits that arise from the cultivator who can have that, is so much higher than all the accumulated merits of the living beings who are not enlightened. It's just like when you cultivate the Bodhisattva way following the Diamond Sutta, when you can reach the stage of no thought, no mark, no dwelling. This is based on the Diamond Sutta understanding. The merit that arises from this, as explained in the Diamond Sutta, is way, way beyond the normal merits of even the sainthood way and all those things. So when you come to the understanding of cultivation, you will come to understand why the Bodhisattva way is so different, so extraordinary. That's why whatever they do, they can never have that delusion to like greed for merit, greed for the no more. They just cultivate. Their mind states are so beautiful. And through their understanding, they know everything they do, the wholesomeness is limitless, beyond, way, way beyond. So all this, hopefully you can reflect that as a human being born during this sasana, when you have the condition to become a human being, to be born during the sasana, to have condition to encounter the Buddha Dhamma, it's just like the famous saying, even in the Theravada tradition, to be born as a human being is very rare. That's why Zen Sen Nan De, means to have a human birth with a human body is very rare. Then even more rare is Fo Fa Nan Wen, to encounter the Buddha Dhamma, the true Buddha Dhamma, is even more rare. Then the saying goes, Zen Sen Nan De Qing Yi De, Fo Fa Nan Wen Qing Yi Wen. Such difficult condition to be born as a human being during the Buddha Sasana, and to have the condition to encounter the Buddha Sasana, these are very rare. But you already have it. You have such condition. So what are you waiting for? That's why this window, if you miss it, you will have to wait a long, long time before the next window appears. So understanding this window, which is the sasana, you have to make sure this understanding stays with you life after life. That's why we have the Bodhisattva vow. We have that book, Cultivating the Bodhisattva Way. You have to develop that type of understanding and invoke the power of merits to determine sincerely, diligently, with faith, to go this way. Yeah. And to have all this right view and right understanding life after life whenever you come. Then you also invoke the asking for forgiveness to break your karmic obstruction from all the triple gem, from all beings, whether knowingly or unknowingly, that you have created karmic negativity or obstruction from the past. Then cultivate affinity or the great beings. Once you do that, your future is all set in place. You have to plant the seed of Bodhi, take the first step to walk the path of the Bodhisattva way to realize Sammasambuddhahood. So that one is very important. This is what the fifth patriarch's message is all about. He said, the question of insistent birth and death is a momentous one. So day after day, instead of trying to free your mind, liberate your mind from the suffering world, yeah, 脱离苦海, suffering world of birth and death, you seems to be going after tainted merit. Yeah. Yet merits will not help you if your merits, yet merits will be of no help if your essence of mind is obscure. You know what is your essence of mind? Your true nature. Obscure. Obscure by what? Huh? Obscure by what? Ah, your deluded thought. Your ignorance. Your self-delusion. So when that nature is obscure, you can never awaken. That's why if you don't know how to meditate to realize the true mind, you can never be enlightened. You can never understand the teaching, the truth. So you need to free your mind from delusion. That's why that obstruction that obscure your true nature, that is the mundane mind. They are like the clouds and all those things that obscure the brightness of the sun from shining through. Then in between, a lot of things distract you, the lightning, the phenomenal world of consciousness. Everything creates so much attachment to you, meaning to you. That's why you cannot free. You get yourself trapped within. So this part is very important. Okay, I will read on. This one you listen. The two poems. One by Sun Siu and the other one by Huineng, the sixth patriarch. However, the disciples said to each other that they didn't need to write any stanza or gatha, and that surely their teacher and head monk, Venerable Sun Siu, would become the sixth patriarch. So only Sun Siu wrote a gatha for Master Hong Ren, the fifth patriarch. But as the head monk, Sun Siu was well respected and under great pressure and stress to produce a gatha that would qualify him as the next patriarch. However, he was uncertain as to his own understanding and eventually decided to write a poem anonymously on the wall in the middle of the night, then intending to announce his authorship only after Master Hong Ren has approved of it. So the poem goes as follows. So the Mandarin one is on your left. Sen Si Pu Ti Su means the body is like a bohi tree. Xing Ru Ming Jing Tai. The mind is a mirror bright on a stand. Then I need somebody to help me. Si Si, what? Qing Fu Si. But the English meaning more important. Polish until it shine. Then? Fu Si Re Chen Ai. So that no dust can align. So this poem, when it was written, everybody was full of joy. Then when the disciples saw this gatha on the wall, there was a great stir. But when Master Hong Ren saw it, he told them, practice according to this gatha, and you will not fall into the evil rhyme, and you will receive great benefit. So he advised them to light incense and pay respect to this gatha. Recite it, and you will see your essential nature. Means when you understand this poem, it can bring about the sainthood way. But you have not realized your true nature. You are at the gate of enlightenment, but you have not developed the wisdom and the understanding to allow your mind to cease. That's why the fifth patriarch called in Shen Xiu. However, privately, Master Hongren told Shen Xiu, he said, you have arrived at the gate of enlightenment, but you haven't had the understanding to enter it. With this level of understanding, you still have no idea of what the Supreme Bohemian is. Then the fifth patriarch told him, upon hearing my words, you should immediately recognize the original mind or your true mind. The essence of mind or the essential nature, which is unborn and unceasing. At all times, see it clearly in every thought, with the mind free from all hindrance. Do you know the meaning or not? At all times, see it. Means you are just aware there at your true nature. This is what ever mindful is all about. You are always aware within, with the mind free from hindrance. In the one reality, everything is real, and all phenomena are just as they are. Means no reality, impermanent, leading to suffering, empty, non-self, not a permanent, unchanging entity. So this is so beautiful, but Shen Xiu still cannot get it. So he tried. He dare not put up a second stanza. But in the meantime, what happened is, when Master Hongren asked Shen Xiu to compose another gatha that demonstrate his true understanding, Shen Xiu tried hard but couldn't come up with another verse. See? If you have your past, the moment the fifth patriarch mentioned that, you were awakened. So Hui Neng didn't even hear that. He was able to counter the poem. Then, later on, when a young Novik monk passed by the rice mill reciting Shen Xiu's gatha, Hui Neng immediately knew that this verse lacked true insight. So he went to the wall and asked a district officer there to write a poem of his own for him. The officer was surprised. He said, how extraordinary. You are an illiterate and you want to compose a gatha. The district officer actually was skeptical, looked down upon him. Then the Wei Hui Neng replied, wow, very, very extraordinary, fantastic. Then Hui Neng, whereupon Hui Neng said, if you seek supreme enlightenment, do not slight anyone. The lowest class may have the great insight, and the highest class may commit foolish act. In veneration, the district officer wrote Hui Neng's gatha on the wall for him, next to Shen Xiu's, which stated, Pu Ti Peng Wu Su, he said. That's why he countered that poem and really put that poem to shame. So the first one, Shen Xiu say, our body is like a Bohi tree. So Bohi means enlightenment. But Hui Neng already realized the true mind. He already knew what that thing is. That's why he said the enlightenment Bohi has got nothing to do with the tree, the Bohi tree. So Pu Ti Pen Wu Su means the Bohi enlightenment is fundamentally without any tree. Then Ming Qing Yi Fei Tai, the mind is neither a stand nor a mirror bride. Then the third verse is the most beautiful. Ben Lai Wu Yi Wu, who is it? Originally, there was nothing. He Chu Re Chen Ai, where can the dust align? Can you follow? This one is very profound. Actually, Shen Xiu's poem is not bad. Shen Xiu's poem is also quite good as far as the Theravada tradition cultivation is concerned. He understands it quite well. He said, our body is like a Bohi tree. Why? Because he knew Sakyamuni Buddha, when he teach in the Theravada tradition, he has this Dhammapada verse saying that within this phantom length body, along with perception, mindfulness and thought, he proclaimed the world, the cause of the arising of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path that lead to the cessation. Means he can proclaim the Four Noble Truths, realize enlightenment through using this five aggregate of form and mind. And this is possible is because under the Satipatthana Sutta, the Four Foundation of Mindfulness, the Buddha said, Ekayano Vikave Bhikkhu. He said, O Bhikkhu, this is the only way for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the realizing of Nibbana, leading to the enlightenment, namely the Four Foundation of Mindfulness. So this Four Foundation of Mindfulness is mindfulness of the kaya, the physical body. That is also inside this physical body, isn't it? Then mindfulness of feeling, that is also within your form and mind, isn't it? Then mindfulness of mind state, citta, nupassana, is also within your mind. Then the last one is mindfulness of Dhamma. Dhamma is also within your form and mind. That's why since you knew within this phantom-like body, you can cultivate, develop the enlightenment. That's why he said our body is like a Bodhi tree with a lot of wisdom there, like a tree of wisdom waiting for you to become enlightened. And the other meaning is, just like the Buddha, he sat underneath the Bodhi tree and he became enlightened. So the Bodhi tree is a symbol of this four foundation of mindfulness. That's why you can cultivate and can realize the sainthood way, the fruition, the enlightenment. So he is correct. But he doesn't understand how the cultivation is to be done. That's why he said, when he reached the second stanza, the mind is like a mirror bright on a stand, he totally got it wrong. You know where he went wrong or not? What is that mind? That mind is the mundane mind. I better write on. Can somebody rub off the whiteboard? That mind is the mundane mind. That is not the true mind. That's why he still have a mind. Mirror bright on the stand. Because that mind, the mundane mind, keep on reflecting things. Then he thought that mind is held somewhere. Means got dwelling. It dwells somewhere. So because of that, he didn't have the ability to penetrate the Dhamma. So that mundane mind is not the true mind. That's where he went wrong. And he keep on doing what they call mindfulness. He said, polish until it shine, so that no dust can alight. Means maintain mindfulness. So ever mindful. But his problem is, he doesn't understand duality, dust. So duality that he create, like the Buddha said, imastin sati idang hoti, imastin asati idang arhoti. Means when this arise, that arise. That is duality. So when you create one side, duality. When you create one side, let's say, good. When you create good. The Buddha say when this arise, the opposite will arise. Evil. Or bad. Why? Because when you create one side, Whatever that is not good is what? Whatever that is not good is what? No, definitely bad, isn't it? But if you don't create, then what happened? Like right and wrong. If you don't create, then both ceases. Understand not? That's why the Buddha said, when this arise, one side arise of the duality, when this arise, that arise. When this ceases, this ceases. You understand? When you don't hold on to duality, when there is no right, there is no wrong. So what is the answer to this duality? You must have the wisdom to see things as they are. When you see things as they are, the other switch, there is another switch, the same switch nearby, two together one, for this one to be on. Then at the back one is at the back there, going on it there. No. The two switch together one, the single one. Huh? Ah, on already. That one is correct. On already. On already. Okay. Then at the back. You want it to be brighter. Okay. So what happened is, the Buddha say, learn to see things as they are. That's why your true mind, the direct seeing, there is no word. Understand or not? No word means no concept, no duality. When there is no word, no concept, no duality, then there is no right, no wrong. No right, no wrong means what? Thing is just the way it is. So, no right and no wrong imply things are just the way they are. And this is the reality. Like the Buddha said, when conditioned like that, things be like that. He is just the way he is, understand not? Take for example, somebody very angry, very violent, very selfish. What do he do? Selfish people will do selfish thing, isn't it? Angry people will say angry thing, isn't it? Deluded people will do deluded thing, isn't it? But our human convention is straight away wrong. You cannot do this. But he is the way he is, understand not? Because he is deluded, he is selfish, he has the evil root of anger. That's why he become like that. So if I accept him for what he is, there is no right, no wrong, understand not? Wrong according to you, understand not? Not according to nature's law. Nature's law, people like that will do this type of thing. So if I can see that, and accept him as he is, then I don't have to come out with duality, understand not? I can be at peace. Yeah, he's like that. But I don't agree with what he do, understand not? Because with wisdom you know, people are the way they are, cannot be otherwise. And the world is the world. Condition like that, things will be like that. You cannot want things your way. That's why Shen Xiu didn't realize the true mind. He cannot understand this. Non-duality. So this one is non-duality. When there is non-duality, your mind free. That's why Shen Xiu is trapped there. And you know, he keep on like very, very determined to do away with the what? The defilement, the dust. He cannot understand this dust that he created is a defilement. Because he doesn't want things that are negative. So when he created this, He tried to cultivate wholesomeness. Wholesomeness. Or good mind state. Mind states. So there is where his problem is. In the first place, he doesn't understand reality, he created dust. So like the Buddha said, when this arrives, that arises. Then what did he do? He cling on to vision. Huh? He attached to vision. He attached to the wholesome state of mind, isn't it? Clear or not? That's why when you have attachment, you have suffering. That's why he can't free his mind. But this is the mundane mind grasping, clinging, holding. How can you free from your own creation? You created one side of the duality. Then you try to end your own creation. Is it possible? Yeah? It's like the thought. You know what happened? Huh? The thought refused to die. You understand? Because the thought wants to survive. Understand? Huh? You tell the thought, cease. How can I cease? Is it? I cease means I die. You know? Understand? Huh? So people who attach and cling to duality is the same. If I don't remove evil or defilement, I cannot become enlightened. No. Because they are limited to knowledge, born of what? Mundane mind. They haven't realized the true mind. So you have to realize the true mind in order to break free. So this one haven't realized the true mind. Its true nature. That's the reason why Sheng Xiu has big problem. But he is very diligent, understand? He maintains mindfulness throughout the day. That's why when you don't understand the cultivation and the practice, you will end up like Sheng Xiu. Every day doing vipassana, nothing. Wisdom is an understanding. You have to awaken and realize that Dhamma, the truth. Then only your mind free. It's not doing, understand? Who do? His thought is actively doing, understand? No? His thought create dust, then he use the thought to remove dust. How can that happen? Like the Buddha said, when this arrives, automatically the other side will arrive. You have to seize your mind and realize that this is duality, not real. Then when this one sees, this one also sees. That's why you look at Hui Ning's poem. What did he say? Pu ti peng wu su. He said, Bohi, enlightenment, is not a tree. Nothing to do with knowledge and concept. Understand not? It's wisdom, understanding. It's in your nature. It's not in a tree. Then that mind that Sheng Xiu mentioned, Ming Jing Yi Fei Tai, he said the true mind is not that mirror bright on the stand. That is not the true mind. He said the true mind, the original mind, originally there was nothing because he didn't create. He knows this is the conditioned world, mundane. So if he don't create, originally there was nothing, then where can your duality thus alight? Understand not? How can it stay in your true mind? Understand not? But the true mind got no word, no concept. That's why Hui Ning understand. He realized the enlightenment and he free, liberate. That's why when he saw the poem, he really slaughtered Sheng Xiu. Completely slaughtered him. Understand not? Because Sheng Xiu cannot understand. So now do you understand? Yeah? If you understand, you awaken. It's just like the pump. You awaken. Yeah. It's not knowledge. You believe in this, and you meditate, silent, you will awaken. Because this is what the teaching is all about. It's so simple. You think to be enlightened is very difficult, very fantastic. You must have, wow, fantastic paramita. There is no such thing. The moment you understand, you awaken. But of course, there is this nature's law that governs it. But things can happen in many ways. Do you understand? Like Hui Ning, an illiterate, just walk by, you go and laugh at him. Because in the past, he has cultivated a lot. That's why he hears the Diamond Sutta, the mind must have no dwelling. He awakened. Why? Because his mind was like that. He was born without a mundane mind. His mind doesn't dwell anywhere. That's why he is very unique. He straight away awakened. Then a lot of the things that he understands is not through words, not through knowledge. That's why an illiterate can awaken. He always say, within the Buddha nature, there is no difference. But if you look outwardly, the physical form, the status and all, then we are different. Then you are born northerner, southerner. Yes, physically. But within the nature, there is no difference. Your nature, my nature, everybody's nature is a oneness nature. It doesn't differ. That's why there is no duality. That's why Hui Ning understand. And the other meaning that Hui Ning told the district officer is, when you aspire for supreme enlightenment, do not slight anyone. Do you know what the meaning is? It's very deep in meaning. Don't look down on anybody. You know what the Mahayana stress upon or not? You cannot even offend an ordinary living being. You know why? Because he has the Buddha nature in him, no? He is a potential Sammasambuddha, no? Do you understand? So we offend a living being, you are offending a future Sammasambuddha. You dare to offend her? You dare to offend her? That's why their cultivation becomes so different. No? You never look down on anybody. Where they have the same potential, like you and me. So this understanding is very important. Then I read on, you will understand. Hui Ning then went back to rice pounding. However, this gatha created a bigger stir. Everybody was saying, so amazing, is it? You can't judge a person by how he look. Maybe he will become a living bodhisattva soon. They straight away make that statement. However, when the master Hong Ren came, he just casually said, this one also haven't really seen the essence or essential nature either. And proceeded to rub off the gatha with his shoe. Then the fifth patriarch went secretly to the kitchen, the rice pounding room, where Hui Ning pound the rice. Seeing that Hui Ning was working with a stone pedestal, he said to him, a seeker of the path risks his life for the Dhamma. Should he not do so? That's why he knew. Because the society cannot accept people like Hui Ning. Because the next intern is definitely Shen Xiu. He's the most senior and the top disciple of the fifth patriarch. So how can you give to a southerner who is an illiterate, and nobody will believe that he has the potential to inherit the patriarchship from the fifth patriarch. That's why he was worried for his life. Otherwise people will really kill him or do something to him. So because of that, he tried to keep all this under secret. So he went and gave a hint to Hui Ning. And Hui Ning, because he is the genuine one and he was ready, he understood the hint. So when he say that a seeker of the path risks his life for the Dhamma, should he not do so? Then the fifth patriarch asked Hui Ning, the rice that you are pounding, is it ready? Hui Ning replied immediately. He said, ready long ago. Before I come and see you, it's already ready. Then he said, waiting to be sieved only. Yeah. Only waiting to be sieved. You know what is sieved or not? So that separate the husk from the rice. Then the fifth patriarch knew. He gave him another hint. He knocked on the mortar thrice. Means in the third watch of the night, come and see me. Knowing what the fifth patriarch meant, in the middle of the night, on the third watch, Hui Ning went to the fifth patriarch's name. The next sentence is very important. This is the one, when you can understand, you understand the whole thing. That night, Master Hong Ren, the fifth patriarch, received Hui Ning in his abode and expounded the Diamond Sutta. See, again, this Diamond Sutta to him. But when he came to the passage, he said, this mundane mind, you must know how to use the mind, yet be free from any attachment. Immediately, Hui Ning came to great awakening. Then he said back to the fifth patriarch, and he said, how amazing is it? Yeah? Because he came to that great enlightenment through realizing that all Dhamma are inseparable from that self nature. What he doesn't understand is how to use that mundane mind. Do you understand? Because he don't have a mundane mind. That's why he don't know what that thing is. But he was born without. So when the fifth patriarch came to that stanza, he straight away knew, you know, that mundane mind is not the true mind. So you have to use it, but yet not be deceived and deluded by it. Means do the duty, but not to have delusion to attach and cling and worry. Because this form of mind recognizes relationship. That's why you use it. And you use it to work with the world, with living beings that recognizes relationship. Do your duty. That's why law of karma and what you will do good. You cannot simply do things. But yet, you are not deluded by it. Means if something were to happen to your loved one or whatever, you know it's anicang dukang anatta, no reality. That's why they are all empty of characteristic. The five aggregate, when Kuan Yin Bodhisattva illuminated on it, he realized that they were all empty. That's how they realized enlightenment. So this is exactly the same. He exclaimed to the fifth patriarch. He said, how amazing that the self nature is originally pure. You understand? That true nature, the oneness nature, is already perfect, pure on its own. How amazing, he said, that the self nature is unborn and undying. Well, that was the original nature. You know what is original nature or not? Originally, before anything arrived, that is the state. You understand? Can you understand? Original nature, Ben Xing. Means before anything arrives, that is your original nature, true nature. And sometimes, they use this word, source. Source of all things. Source. Or true nature. And also original nature. So all these are words that people use, but they point towards the same thing. So the source and the original nature is the same. From there it arises. Because it is the source. That's why it was never born, understand? It was already there. That's why this one is never born. Never born means what? Never die. Understand? The unborn, how can the unborn die? That's why this is the unconditioned. The unborn is the unconditioned. It doesn't arise due to condition. So this one is the unborn. Unconditioned. That's why ours is the conditioned world. This is the unconditioned world. Doesn't need condition to arise. That's why this one, no word, nothing, no concept, no mundane mind. Only that true nature that can understand and awaken. But you need a form and mind to come, because the form and mind got the gateway to connect to this. That's why you must learn how to meditate and realize this. Then only you can awaken. Otherwise you can't. Yeah. So this particular explanation by the sutta is very good. That's why Huineng say, how amazing that the self nature is originally pure, perfect. How amazing that the self nature is unborn and undying. And how amazing that the self nature is inherently complete. How amazing that the self nature neither move nor stay. Understand? Then how amazing that all Dhamma come from the self nature. That one you understand, is that? Huh? Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. That mind, the mundane mind, come from where? Huh? Come from your true nature, isn't it? Without that true nature, there is no mundane mind. That's why from there, everything arises. Yeah. So, that is the reason why when Huineng awakened, he understands. He said, how amazing that all Dhamma, everything that you talk about, the conditioned and the unconditioned, they arise from that self nature. Nothing is apart from that self nature. It's like the Tao. Remember? The Tao. Whatever that can be described or spoken is not the true Tao. You heard of that opening statement, isn't it? But towards the end, he said, nothing is apart from the Tao. Then what is Tao? Whatever that can be spoken or described or put into word is not the true Tao. But nothing is apart from the Tao. Means the Tao is like the self nature. From there, everything, the mind right thing, come from the Tao. Understand now? That's why nothing is apart from the Tao. But the true Tao, you cannot talk about it. You cannot describe. You cannot put it into word. It's like Nibbana. Nibbana is beyond thought, beyond time, beyond description. No word. It's cessation. The unconditioned. Cannot be phantom by the conditioned mind. That is what the unconditioned is all about. That's why the Tao teaching is also very beautiful. Very complete in that sense. Okay? Then I read on. He exclaimed, oh sorry, that part we finished. Eh? Then Master Hongren told Huineng, now this statement you better listen. If one recognizes the true mind or the original mind or the original nature, he is called a... Look at the Hasutta. He is called the great man. And what is the great man? He is the teacher of God and human. And he is a Buddha. Do you understand? He passed the rope and the begging bowl, actually it's the alms bowl, as a symbol of the Dhamma seal of sudden enlightenment to Huineng. That's why he inherited the sixth patriarchship. Although this story is as clearly stated as it can be, it should also be noted that Huineng was not permitted to make himself known as the sixth patriarch until later on. It was due to the fear that his fellow monk might be angered and harm him that he has been made the sixth patriarch and not Sun Siu or one of the other monk who had seniority over him. So he has to go into hiding for almost 15 years. He was with the hunter for 15 years until condition arise for him to come out. Mm. And last year we have a spiritual trip and then we went there. Oh, not last year, the previous year. We are now 2019. 2017 we went there. Very beautiful, that trip. We saw every of his, the way place that he was. His birthplace, the place where he, the flag and the what on, at that monastery, I don't know what's the name, really, where he became famous when he came out again. The only place we didn't go is the northern one, the Huang Mei Mountain. But all the other places, the southern part that he was involved in, we were all there. And all his teachings were on the pillar everywhere. So beautiful. The three great hallmarks of Huineng's teaching. Wu Nian, Wu Xiang, Wu Zhu. So beautiful. And that trip was so wonderful. All the Kayamita who went there, they really, really enjoy it. They love it. And it was so beautiful. So that covers the Huineng part. So we are finished with chapter 2. What's the time now? 5 more minutes. Oh, lunch time already. Oh yeah, 7 more minutes. Okay. You got any question? Do you have any question? You can ask. Anything that you don't understand or you need me to clarify. Any? Don't have, then we break for early lunch. So that you can also come back early. Okay. So we will do the sharing of merit, transfer merit towards the end of the day. We don't have to do it now. Okay, so you can pay your respect to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones. Then sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then we can break for lunch. So after lunch, you're supposed to come back. Oh yeah, I must administer the 8 precepts for you all. Okay, you want me to administer the 8 precepts now? Better, huh? Okay. Some not around. Where are they? Oh, then you come back only, I administer. So that those who take the 8 precepts at night, you don't eat. Okay, we will do it later. So you come back at about 1:30, but if possible, 5 or 10 minutes earlier, better, so that we can start earlier. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.